the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
My name is Victor Garcia. I am a student of Latin American and Caribbean studies at the University of South Florida. I'm a queer Black Puerto Rican who lives in the United States, and that's pretty much what I would identify myself as. Growing up as a Black Puerto Rican in the United States was an experience that I think majorly made an impact on my politics, on the things that I identify with and believe in. So I'm from the South. I grew up in between Texas and Florida, and as a result, my identity kind of was formed by experiences that were made in moves between different parts of the South, between Florida and Texas. So in Texas, there weren't as many Puerto Ricans living there. There were a few, so we found the few that were there in the Austin area and made a community with them. I was really young when this happened. I was probably 6 years old at the latest when I started meeting these people. And they taught me basically what Puerto Rican identity was there in the absence of other Puerto Ricans. You know, they taught me a lot of our cultural traditions. They taught me a lot of the food, the dances, things that we would do at Christmas time and things like that. And it had a major impact on how I look at myself. But it also taught me that Puerto Rico was a colony. And I didn't have the words to say that at the time, but I understood, like, I'm Puerto Rican and all these people are Puerto Rican, but we're not in Puerto Rico and we're living away from our families. We're living away from Puerto Rico. We're living away from this context. And I don't really understand why that is because I'm a child, but I understood that there was something behind that. And then when I was about 8 years old, I moved to Florida permanently. Like, we had moved there once when I was younger, probably like 4 or 5. And then we moved back to Texas. But permanently, we moved when I was 8 to Florida. And in Florida, there were a lot more Puerto Ricans. There were a lot more people who, you know, shared culture with me. But I remember a lot of times when I would be in school where lighter-skinned Puerto Ricans would kind of imply, oh, you're not Puerto Rican, you don't look Puerto Rican. Like, what are you? You're not Puerto Rican. And I remember that being very confusing for me. I remember that being something that caused me to feel like rejected in a lot of ways. And I'm realizing now that one of the things that they said to me a lot was, oh, you look Dominican. And in reflection of that, I think that it has to be in reference to the fact that I'm of, you know, obvious African descent. I'm lighter skinned. I obviously have admixture in me, but even still, like, the people who were not identifiably Black, who might have had African ancestry, but who weren't themselves Black, who didn't identify themselves Black the way that I did, they were the ones that were, you know, pushing that on me and kind of making it into an insult. And it was weird for me too, because I was like, well, why are you making even being Dominican an insult? I love Dominicans. Like, my mom had a lot of Dominican friends in addition to Puerto Rican friends and things like that. So that kind of like put a complex on me that caused me to realize that there was a major like struggle within even my own community of Puerto Ricans that had to do with race, that had to do with color. And I had even been brought up to think, oh, you know, like in our culture, we don't really have that. But I was watching in real time, it happened to me. And I'd seen how it happened to my mom, and I'd seen how it happened to other people in my family, and I'd even seen it within members of my family. I'm Puerto Rican because my mom was born in Puerto Rico and her mom is Puerto Rican, but we have other backgrounds too. My grandfather, my mother's father, is Panamanian. He's also a Panamanian of Afro-Caribbean descent. And my dad is Colombian Guatemalan. But I grew up really like it was me, my mom, and my brother. And so the culture that we were really like taught, raised with was Puerto Rican. So there was, you know, a bit of confusion in that sense because I did have other backgrounds. But also being rejected specifically because of the way that I looked, and that being in reference to my skin, my hair texture, my personality, all of those things presented a major issue within the framework of unified Puerto Rican or Latino identity that I could clearly see wasn't the case. Between the moving itself, I think that there was also an impact that it had on me, because when we were moving, we would not move in airplanes. We would be moving, we would do road trips. Basically, we would go through the bottom parts of the South along the Gulf of Mexico, and we would make stops frequently in New Orleans. And it was there that I kind of, you know, I'd already had a kind of understanding that my family was of African descent, that we were, you know, we're Puerto Rican, but we are Black Puerto Ricans because of the cultural traditions that they had taught me. And when we were in New Orleans, I could see a lot of similarities between our two cultures through the music, through things like voodoo and the history of Congo Square and all those things that I would see there. And we would kind of, I could see myself in the cultural part of it, but then I could also see myself in the struggle of it too, because I remember there being times where we would stop and there would be major disparities between the ways that white people in those places treated us and Black people in those places treated us. Around Black people, it was like we were, you know, visiting family members. Around white people, it was as if we were foreigners and we were simply moving through where we lived to get from one side to the other. And so that kind of, it never made me to feel like we were in immediate danger, but it caused me to recognize that there was something going on in terms of race, in terms of the way that people look at you and things like that. This is like my early childhood. This is before I turned 13, I would say. Like before I turned 13, all of these things were happening. And I, you know, I was kind of developing this very early on and making observations about the world around me that related to my positionality socially. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't have the words for it at the time, but I did know that there was something happening and I was taking note of it. Around the time that I turned 13, around 2008, my mother started working in the Obama campaigns. And so, like I said, because of the fact that we were Puerto Ricans who are Black, we could identify with, you know, a Black president becoming president. That was something that was really big for us. And that was something that was kind of instilled in us as children. So my mom and her grandparents both were, you know, they're like, yo, like, a Black person becoming president means that there's things that are changing in the world. And that would mean that there are going to be good things happening for Black people in the United States. And there probably could even be good outcomes for Puerto Rico. That was something that we were brought up in when we were kids. And at the same time, as I watched the administration unfold, I was, like I said, I was 13 years old and I was starting to really make an identity for myself out of what I was watching happen around me. So during the Obama administration, I was watching the anti-war movement die out and be suppressed by the, you know, by the National Guard, by the Obama administration's rhetoric about war and things, and the tendency of the Democratic Party to lighten condemnations of war when it's Democratic presidents happening. I was watching that happen. You know, my dad is in the military, and like, I didn't grow up with him in the house, but there were times where he would be out, you know, for years at a time, and I never saw him. And that had an impact on me for two reasons. One, I didn't have a dad that I could, even if I didn't live with him, there could have been a way that I could see him, but that was taken away from me. And then two, I also had to consider like the kind of work that he was doing in the military and the impact that was having on people outside of the world. All of those things really had a deep impact on me. And Obama promised, you know, we're going to bring the troops home, we're going to stop having war. Well, you know, his current successor is saying the same things, you know, 15 years later. I saw the Wall Street Occupy movement happen, and I saw people getting tear gassed. I watched the Syrian situation explode, and it was under Obama that it was happening. I watched people get deported, people that I knew in my neighborhoods and my communities had family members sent out of the country under Obama. And I watched Black Lives Matter come to fruition. I watched that whole discourse start, and it was under the Obama administration. I saw under the Obama administration was when Trayvon Martin died, and that was within, you know, I was but a stone's throw away from that, you know, that community within the same age cohort as Trayvon Martin. And that did something to my brain where I was like, yo, like, even here in a community that I'm around people that might look like me, not two neighborhoods over or whatever, not too far away from where I am, are people getting, you know, killed for looking similar to how I look. And I couldn't imagine what it was like for people who, you know, who were darker skinned than me, who did have the more unambiguously African features and things, that were walking through the world with the same fear, if not higher than I was currently having. So that, you know, that was doing things inside of my 16-year-old head that was changing the way that I was seeing things. And I think that was like, when I saw Standing Rock happen, I was in college. And by that point, I think I had kind of woken up and said, you know what, like, this is kind of bullshit. Like, the things that are happening outside of what the rhetoric is within the liberalism proves that the rhetoric isn't true. So that kind of woke me up. Going back to Black Lives Matter and that movement for Black life that's kind of currently happening, I don't like to say Black Lives Matter is the movement anymore, because I realize now that, you know, there's a longer, deeper tradition that's taking place right now outside of the specific Black Lives Matter movement. But, you know, it was that rhetoric that kind of got me to see exactly where, you know, like, that the civil rights movement didn't end when Martin Luther King died, and that, you know, Black power wasn't something that was just in the 60s, but that this is something that we need to continue to be doing. I saw that happen. And like I said, Trayvon Martin died doing some stuff that my brother and I were always doing. He was walking through a neighborhood with some snacks in his hand, and it was not far away from me, and he was not much older than me. And then I had to listen to people in my neighborhood around me, including people that claim to love me and care about me, talk about how much this kid, Trayvon Martin, was a thug and was this and that and deserved it. And that made me realize, like, you know, I can't just live in a world and see all these things happen and kind of go on the same way. Like, what radicalized me really becomes a question of survival for myself and for my community, because I'm realizing that there are people out here who are dead set against our continued existence. So I could see the pattern getting bigger as I got older, and I started to pay attention also to the ways that gender and sexuality tied into it as I continued to kind of explore that in myself. And I could see everywhere that I was implicated, there were a couple of culprits at the bottom of it, and it was always capitalists and pigs. It was always the people that had a lot of money and the people that enforced their ability to abuse people because they had a lot of money that were at the back of all of these movements and things that I loved and was interested in academically, because I'm an academic person. I like to read. I like to, you know, explore things in education and things like that. But when I looked at the bottom of it all, when I looked at what was bringing things down, I was like, oh, white supremacy and capitalism and colonialism are the things that are causing all of these things to fall apart. All of these things to be the way they are not disconnected from these systems that, you know, continue to oppress us to these days. So, you know, and I learned about the Black Panther Party and the Young Lords Party and all these other movements that were happening years prior. And then I learned about COINTELPRO. It made me realize, like, there's no way that I'm ever going to be able to trust the same institution that is currently and has historically left us for dead. And so the last thing I really want to, like, touch on is how you know, the question is what radicalized you? And I think really I'm also answering what radicalizes me, what continues to push me to be radicalized and to think outside of the prescriptive colonialist capitalist box. And it's the invasion of gringos into Puerto Rico. So if you don't know, gringo in the Puerto Rican context refers generally to anybody that's not, you know, from the Caribbean region, not from Puerto Rico, who doesn't have what's what about that community. But additionally, in particular, it's referring to, you know, white American settlers and colonizers who, for the last 123 years, have been kind of abusing Puerto Ricans and the Puerto Rican land for their benefit, for the benefit of empire. The major thing that's happening right now is that there are these acts that exist in Puerto Rico, Act 20, Act 22, Act 60, and long story short, those acts allow for these people to come into Puerto Rico, set up businesses, and only pay up to 4% of the taxes that they should be paying. And this isn't something that Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico can benefit from. It's not something that diaspora Puerto Ricans can benefit from. It's really for the benefit of, well, basically white people who are from the imperial core. They're trying to advocate for statehood right now for Puerto Rico, when in reality there has been 123 years of a push for independence of the island. And so the invasion of gringos into Puerto Rico economically and politically is literally causing major shifts to happen on the island. It's coming as a result of displacement that happened because the government was incompetent during Hurricane Maria. In 2019, there was a major protest to depose the governor at the time, and they didn't just get the governor, they got the governor and the one following him and the one following that governor. And even today, the current government is still unelected and is still consistently trying to make decisions over the desires of the Puerto Rican people. So in essence, the thing that's radicalizing me right now is the continued need to advocate for Puerto Rican independence, reparations from both Spain and the United States, internal reparations to Black and Indigenous Puerto Ricans by white Puerto Ricans, and in essence, a socialist, feminist, decolonial economy that is aligned and allied with all the other Antillean island nations against imperialism and against the imposition of empire by the United States. What radicalized me is what continues to radicalize me. And it's seeing the ways that, you know, my story is not isolated from other Black Puerto Ricans who grew up in my context and other Black Puerto Ricans in general.